This morning I'm standing on the Golan Heights, high above the Sea of Galilee. But why are the Golan Heights so strategically important to Israel today? The answer next on The Prophetic Connection.
This place, the Mount of Olives, very near. Fulfilling the prophecy, waiting for the day when the Messiah will come.
In times of war, high ground is always important. It's easier to defend, it's much harder to attack. And so these Golan Heights that overlook the Sea of Galilee are important to Israel for that reason. But also the Golan Heights in the modern context also form a buffer zone between Syria and Jordan to the east of Israel, because that's the direction that enemies would come from when they would attack Israel, whose back is to the Mediterranean Sea. So actually Israel is surrounded on all sides, north, south, and east, in that sense, and also from the west in terms of navies that could come along the Mediterranean coast. So the Golan Heights today, because of the enemies that are across the border with Syria, Hezbollah and Iranian Red Guards and others who are building bases over there, and in fact taking advantage of the vacuum created by the Syrian civil war. So the Golan Heights are strategically important to Israel. But there is much more about that.
Most people have heard about the Golan Heights through newspaper headlines or television reports. But how many know the biblical origins of this region, also known as the Land of Bashan?
In the Old Testament Hebrew Scriptures, we see that there was a period of time when Israel, at war with the Amorites, defeated them. And in fact, two tribes of Israel lived on those Golan Heights, also known as Bashan. That was the tribe of Dan and the tribe of Manasseh. There is biblical precedent for Jewish people to live on those very Golan Heights.
According to the Bible, Israel has the right, given by God, to claim the Golan Heights. The Golan Heights is part of the land inheritance that was given to Abraham by covenant from God. Throughout the history of the kings and the nation of Israel in biblical days, the Golan Heights was called Bashan, and it was considered an integral part of the land of Israel. Yes, Israel does have a biblical right to claim the Golan Heights.
If Israel has biblical and historical claims to the Golan Heights, is there any archaeological evidence to support such claims?
Ancient archaeology history, this is part of biblical Israel. As part of the, logically, when the British and the French were creating the modern Middle East, that was supposed to be part of the territory, but in the negotiations between the British and the French, the Golan Heights ended up as part of what is Syria of today. So in terms of the modern, all the history of the past aside, in terms of the modern boundaries of the Middle East, the Golan Heights was originally part of Syrian territory. But, and if you know your geography, and again, most people yelling about the Golan Heights have no idea where it is. The Golan Heights sits way above Israel and was used from 48 to 67 to basically shoot down on the Upper Galilee. So in the various wars that Israel's been involved in, primarily in 1967 and 1973, and this is how it works anywhere in the world, another country declares war on you with the goal of destroying you. They lose that war and Israel gains that strategic heights, which are, by the way, less than 3% of Syria, but strategically are in a position to terrorize the whole northern part of Israel. Israel wins that territory in a war it didn't start and has kept that territory since. In 1973, the Syrians tried to get it back again. They were unsuccessful. Initially, they were a little successful, but it's been in Israel's hands ever since. So the notion that, and Israel is the only country in the world that is treated, that fights wars that it didn't start against people who want to kill it, wins the wars, and then is treated as if it's the belligerent side that started the wars and lost them, and has to give territory back to the people that tried to kill it. So it's unprecedented. The reality is, by the way, the Syrians, if you know about the Golan Heights, put nothing up there. It's a teeny percentage of Syria that was only a giant army base with barbed wire and minefields, and was used as a launching point for attacks against Israel. Israel, and there's some, a few Druze living up there. Israel settled people in there and has made much better use of the territory. So again, does Israel have a right? I think in terms of all precedents in warfare, the British are still sitting in Gibraltar. And there's many other countries that are occupying territory they won in wars that are far older, that have far less strategic value to them. Okay, Gibraltar sits in the Mediterranean, but the Golan Heights is absolutely critical to Israel's survival, especially now that Iran is trying to open up a corridor and they want to sit up there and turn the Golan Heights into a little version of the Gaza Strip, being able to just launch missiles directly into Israel with no warning and little or no protection. So absolutely, it seems on a strategic level, Israel must keep control of the Golan Heights.
Given the strategic importance of the Golan Heights where Israel's eastern and northern flanks are concerned, how dangerous would it be for Israel to give up its claims to this region in exchange for peace?
One thing we've learned from history in general, and specifically the 20th century, is making peace with dictators isn't worth the paper it's written on. If you don't believe me, ask Neville Chamberlain, the Prime Minister of England in 1938, when he goes to make, he holds that piece of paper. I hold in my hands the piece of paper that guarantees peace in our lifetime. And within a few months, all of Europe is at war and 50 million people will die. So that's number one rule. So I would say, if the Middle East were a normal, stable, liberal, democratic place, then yes, there's something to talk about there. That's not the case. Now, if Syria were a functioning country that was truly autonomous, which is to say it wasn't before 2012, before the Arab Spring and everything took off, even then I might consider such an arrangement for a sort of neutral, non-militarized area. But the problem is, who would guarantee that? Like a buffer zone where no weapons were allowed in? Because Israel cannot allow a hostile state to be sitting 1,200 feet above it, over the Hula Valley, being able to shoot at will down into a people they hate and want to destroy. But that's all in the past. We know that Syria is a dysfunctional state being propped up by Iran and by Russia today. The current state where Iran, our arch enemy, is literally trying to make inroads through Lebanon and Syria and create a right on Israel's border. It's like having the Nazis move into your neighborhood and be worried about the safety of your synagogue. Under the current situation of today, of Syria being a dysfunctional state that only exists because it's being propped up by other powers, there's no way that any normal person looking at the geopolitical and strategic realities of the Golan Heights would say that Israel should in any way ever agree to return that territory to Syria or anyone else who threatens it.
I don't believe that Israel should ever give up the Golan in an attempt to achieve peace with our neighbors. What has been proven in recent years is that the equation of land for peace will not work unless there is a partner on the other side of great integrity and great power, and a partner that can be trusted to keep the promises of the other nation. Today, we see no such partners in the countries that surround us, and so the equation or the solution of land for peace simply won't work. It's not a good idea to even try to give up the Golan in exchange for some kind of peace agreement.
The collapse of Syria and the ongoing struggle between various entities vying for control has led to a much more precarious situation in Syria today. Israel now faces numerous enemies at her eastern and northern gates. This means that Israeli control over the Golan is more important than ever before. In other words, the deterioration of events on the ground in Syria means that keeping control of the Golan is Israel's best hope of keeping her enemies at bay, if just beyond her long border with Syria. Don't go away. After this short break, Dr. John Twee returns with his teaching. October 7th will forever be seared into the minds and hearts of Israel. Not since the Holocaust have such brutal atrocities been inflicted on God's chosen people? Because of this massacre and the ensuing war, the most vulnerable citizens of this tiny peace-seeking nation are in desperate need. C4I has been there from the start, supplying much-needed resources for the charities on the ground who look after children, Holocaust survivors, the poor, and so many more. This has been a great challenge, and your support is crucial as we continue to stand with the Jewish nation. When you give a one-time donation of $25 or more, you will be making a real difference in the lives of the people of Israel. And as a special thank you, you will receive the bi-monthly newspaper Israel and Christians Today. Call the number on your screen now, 1-888-206-1986. Or go to c4i.ca with your generous gift and show the people of Israel that you care.
A quick glance at any map of the Middle East is enough to show the importance of the location of the Golan Heights where Israel's security is concerned, because they run across Galilee from north to south. And so in the northern part of the country and to the east of the Sea of Galilee, which in fact you can see behind me, the heights form a buffer zone between Israel and the enemies to the east. But through the camera lens, you also get the perspective of height. And so we are high above the Sea of Galilee. And this area was held by the Syrians from 1948, with the rebirth of Israel, until 1967, when Israel could capture the heights at the end, the last couple of days of that surprisingly short 6-day war. But I want to talk about the Golan Heights for other reasons, because it's the original name of this region was Bashan. And we find that in the scriptures, and specifically in the book of Deuteronomy. And as Moses and the armies of Israel were moving up through, not through the Holy Land itself, but to the east of the River Jordan, and fighting one king and kingdom after another, they finally came to the region of Bashan. And we read in Deuteronomy chapter 3 in verse 1, "Then we," meaning the armies of Israel, "turned and went up the road to Bashan," meaning they were moving north. "And Og, king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. And the Lord said to me," God speaking to Moses, "do not fear him, for I have delivered him and all his people and his land into your hand. You shall do to him as you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon." So that's a battle that was already fought and won by Israel, but now the northern part of the promised land is next. And so we read in verse 3, "So the Lord our God also delivered into our hands Og, king of Bashan, with all his people, and we attacked him until he had no survivors remaining. And we took all his cities at that time. There was not a city which we did not take from them, 60 cities, all the region of Argob, the kingdom of Og in Bashan. All these cities were fortified with high walls, gates, and bars, besides a great many rural towns." So there were 60 major cities, but they captured everything that came in front of them. "And we utterly destroyed them, as we did to Sihon, king of Heshbon, utterly destroying the men, women, and children of every city." Now, I won't take too much time to explain why Israel would not have shown mercy to the women and children. I think the context is we're dealing with spiritual things. And within these people, thoroughly pagan, there were, I would say, demonic entities. And so they would be passed down through the generations, from one generation to the next. And we're not talking about just people with bad intentions. We're talking about evil dwelling within these people. And so I think that's probably the easiest explanation, because Israel as a nation shows mercy to her enemies. But I think this was a very different context, and that's why the children were destroyed as well. Verse 7, "But all the livestock and the spoil of the cities we took as booty for ourselves. And at that time we took the land from the hand of the two kings of the Amorites who were on this side of the Jordan, So let me emphasize, these battles are taking place on the east of the Jordan because Moses was forbidden by God from entering the promised land. So he could lead them in battle here, but we read later in the book of Deuteronomy that he could not cross into the promised land, but God would let him see it from the pinnacle of Mount Nebo. Verse 9, the Sidonians call Hermon Sirion, and the Amorites call it Senir. And that's Mount Hermon that's being referenced here, which is in the north, north from where I'm actually standing. And all the cities of the plain, all Gilead and all Bashan, as far as Salcah and Edrei, cities of the kingdom of Og in Bashan. Now, there's a very interesting reference here to the king of this region, the king of Bashan, whose name was Og. It's found in verse 11 of Deuteronomy 3. For only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the giants. And then this incredible reference. Indeed, his bedstead was an iron bedstead. It had to be to support, obviously, his weight. Is it not in Rabbah of the people of Ammon? And Ammon today is the capital of Jordan, so we're being told that it was in the region of Edom, or rather Ammon. We have a kingdom of Jordan is made up of Ammon, Moab, and Edom in the south. So Ammon is the northern part of what today is the kingdom of Jordan. And this iron bedstead was there when Moses was writing this account. And then we're given the dimensions of the bedstead. 9 cubits is its length and 4 cubits its width, according to the standard cubit. Now, what was a standard cubit? And opinions vary, but by a rule of thumb, approximately 18 inches, perhaps, to 2 feet. My commentary suggests that the bedstead was at least 18 feet long and 8 feet wide, designed to hold a very large man. In this case, a king, King Og of the region of Bashan. And this land, which we possessed at that time from Aroer, which is by the river Arnon, and half the mountains of Gilead and its cities, I gave to the Reubenites and the Gadites. So now with the conquest of this part of the Middle East, Moses is assigning the land conquered to the various tribes of Israel. And so we've mentioned here the tribe of Reuben, the first tribe of Israel, the tribe of Gad. And then it says in verse 13, the rest of Gilead and all Bashan, the kingdom of Og, I gave to the half tribe of Manasseh. All the region of Argob with all Bashan was called the land of the giants. Now we see in Deuteronomy chapter 3 references to Bashan, where I'm standing today, called the Golan Heights, as the land of the giants. We're bound to wonder how that could possibly be. So I need to go all the way back to the book of Genesis to chapter 6 and something that God said to Noah. And it's found in Genesis 6 verse 4. There were giants on the earth in those days and also afterward. Afterward meaning after the flood that occurred in Noah's day. When the sons of God came into the daughters of men and they bore children to them. I'll explain that very simply this way. Angels, fallen angels, who had illicit sexual relationships with women, human beings on earth. And from those illicit relationships came a race of giants. And of course, we know from the story of David and Goliath, Goliath was the Philistine champion who confronted the armies of Israel, and no soldier of Israel was brave enough to take him on because he was a giant, a huge man. But David, the shepherd boy of Israel, stepped through the ranks of the Israelites and without armor, just a slingshot, brought down the Philistine warrior champion. So presumably he too was a descendant. But the interesting reference in Genesis 6 is there were giants both before and after the flood. So when we read about King Og of Bashan, he presumably, he traces his roots all the way back to to those earlier giants that were in the world. And in the 21st century, we have some trouble comprehending men of this giant stature, but the Bible is telling us the origins of these individuals and the fact that they were still there when Moses was conquering these lands. And in fact, we find that in Joshua and Caleb, who assumed control of the armies of Israel, when Caleb was asked about his inheritance, he said he wanted the city in the region of Hebron. And in Hebron today, they have found remnants of giant doorways, giant stairways. Archaeologists have proven the existence of giants in the time of, certainly of Moses and Joshua and Caleb. Now, I want to move to the modern context and speak about the strategic importance of the Golan Heights in our times. In 1967, Israel captured the Golan Heights from the Syrians. They'd been here since 1948, when Israel was reborn as a nation, until 1967, so that's 19 years. And they had several lines of defenses up here, and they could shell down at the farmers or even the fishermen on the Sea of Galilee, because across the Sea of Galilee is Israel, and that was Israel from 1948 to 1967, and Syria controlled this side of the Sea of Galilee. Well, there's a story of a very brave Israeli. His name is Eli Cohen, and he became an operative of the Mossad, the intelligence services. His father had been born in Aleppo in Syria. He had a photographic memory. He could speak, learned numerous languages, was fluent in Arabic and so forth. So Israel built a cover for him as an agent with the intention of placing him in Syria to gather information. He was very, very successful. And he, in fact, as a civilian, perhaps the only civilian, he was able to go along the top of the Golan Heights, see all of the emplacements where the armaments were, the bunkers, what kind of artillery and guns the Syrians had. He rose up through the ranks. This cover was made for him. He spent time in Argentina with the Syrian diplomats and other figures there, and with letters of reference from them, eventually got to Syria. He was in Syria from 1962 to 65 until he was caught transmitting signals to Israel. He was hanged in the public square in Damascus before an estimated 10,000 people. It was televised around the world. But this man saw what was up here prior to the Six-Day War in 1967. And with his photographic memory and with his communication with Israel, transmitted it all back. So when Israel finally attacked the Golan Heights in the latter part of the Six-Day War in June of 1967, the information that Eli Cohen had provided enabled Israel to take what was considered to be impregnable. I mean, to try to capture the Golan Heights with the army, Syrian army up here, three lines of defense, which was something else Eli Cohen discovered. Not one line of defense, but three. And so it was so, so well fortified. But he also identified where the bunkers were, because he suggested to the Syrian commanders, you know, your soldiers are in the sun all day long, the blistering heat. Why don't you plant eucalyptus trees where the bunkers are to give them shade? And they grow very, very quickly. Well, they did it. They fell for it, and they did it. And so in Israel, the Israeli Air Force attacked. They just aimed for the trees, and it shortened the war. And in a matter of 2 to 3 days, Israel captured the Golan Heights. It's an incredible story, and it's been made popular today by a new series about our man in Damascus, as he was called, Eli Cohen, super spy for Israel. Well, I have something else to share about the status of the Golan Heights, but I'll do it after this short break.
The people of Israel yet again are at the center of the world's attention after suffering an unjust, unprovoked, and unprecedented attack within her borders. Yet Israel continues to thrive, However, there have been many of the less fortunate that have fallen through the cracks. C4I, with all of these challenges, has been able to continue their support of those in need because of people like you. Through their partners on the ground, meals and supplies have continued and are making a real difference in Israel. Your monthly giving is what keeps things going, even in these most difficult times. Become a new monthly partner today with your gift of just $25 a month or more, and you will receive the DVD, Seven Amazing Prophecies Fulfilled, as well as the bi-monthly newspaper, Israel and Christians Today. Call now, 1-888-206-1986, or visit us online and make a difference in Israel today.
As we conclude this episode on the strategic nature of the Golan Heights in Israel, we do so in a very windswept place, but a place that has a new and very significant development honoring President Donald Trump. The message is in the sign behind me. On December 6, 2017, Donald Trump announced that he would move the United States Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and in doing so, giving recognition to Jerusalem as the capital city of Israel. On May 14th, the next year, the embassy was opened in Jerusalem, officially speaking. But then on March 25th of 2019, Donald Trump made another astounding announcement. He announced that the United States henceforth would recognize the Golan Heights as properly belonging to the state of Israel, because it was in the distant past, in biblical times, part of Israel, but it has become part of Israel again, starting in 1967 at the conclusion of the Six-Day War. So the message in the sign is to say that the nation of Israel honors her friends. Because this president boldly has recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and the Golan Heights as part of biblical and modern Israel, Israel honors him. The name in Hebrew means Ramat Trumph, but translated Trumph Heights. It's a place called Kila Elon on the Golan Heights, and it will become, as time goes by, a town called Trumph. In the next episode, the non-negotiable Temple Mount.
We're so glad you joined us today on the Prophetic Connection. Tune in next time for the non-negotiable Temple Mount. October 7th will forever be seared into the minds and hearts of Israel. Not since the Holocaust have such brutal atrocities been inflicted on God's chosen people. Because of this massacre and the ensuing war, the most vulnerable citizens of this tiny peace-seeking nation are in desperate need. C4I has been there from the start, supplying much-needed resources for the charities on the ground who look after children, Holocaust survivors, the poor, and so many more. This has been a great challenge, and your support is crucial as we continue to stand with the Jewish nation. When you give a one-time donation of $25 or more, you will be making a real difference in the lives of the people of Israel. And as a special thank you, you will receive the bi-monthly newspaper Israel and Christians Today. Call the number on your screen now, 1-888-206-1986. Or go to c4i.ca with your generous gift and show the people of Israel that you care.